Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
I am Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
Pikiyee.
We are live. In 3, 2, 1.
Everybody's got a new way of doing that countdown, Lanny.
It's, yeah, what happened to the megaphone?
I don't know. Listen at that now.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. I've never used a megaphone.
Oh, you're right. He doesn't need one.
He's got the radio.
Yeah. Richie the voice.
Yes, he is.
The voice made for radio. The face made for radio.
We're
yep.
It's raining outside, but we're all thinking about turkeys. There's a big event tomorrow at the store.
Yeah, it'll be over by the time this airs. Yep.
Yeah.
But turkey season will still be on the horizon when this airs. So.
And then there's a premiere tonight.
It sure is. There is. I can't get in trouble, I guess, but the premiere of the Curl and the Fox, a actual motion picture film that we produced. It's so exciting. By the time this airs, it won't be long, at least. You should be able to.
Yeah, get it online. It'll be,
get it online. That's get it on email.
Very exciting. Watch it, well
watch
done.
It on Mossy Oak Ghost.
Downtown West Point movie premiere tonight.
I've been just last night. I got to look at it. I was going to wait till tonight when we're actually having a premiere tonight at an old movie theater place here. But it's definitely the most significant thing in the history of Mossy Oak that we've ever produced.
All right.
No question about it.
You got your ticket, Bobby?
Yeah, I got 4 tickets.
I got my tickets too.
So if you're out there, we'll talk about it again, because the next time we film or we record something, like next week, we'll have all watched it, everybody.
Yeah, sweet.
So yeah, we
might even have someone in to talk about it. And I think it was 3 years in the works.
We can do a review of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I saw a little clip of it at NWTF, it was chill bumps and tears.
Yep.
It was amazing.
It is amazing.
The Colonel and the Fox.
Colonel and the Fox.
That's it.
How, well, and then to spread that out a little bit, how our greatest generation of turkey hunters saved turkeys for us.
Oh, yeah.
And so, they make the point in seeing both of them, they're still both alive and still able to talk about stuff and all, especially through this, that could be – they're one of the very, very few, if not only, people alive that killed a turkey before World War II that are still alive. And, of course, the colonel was a colonel in World War II. He fought in 2 wars. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, it really
and
is.
What's the other thing that's amazing that I didn't realize the last night, I always knew about him. I'd actually kind of met him. He was in the camp one time we were there, but it was like you didn't really go bother him and stuff, But they grew up only blocks apart.
Yeah, that
in
is.
In the same hometown.
In Mobile,
Alabama.
Huh, yep. That's interesting.
That is. It really is. I can't wait to see it tonight.
Me neither.
So today we're recording the first in a series of, we're calling it a master series of specific calls. And we're going to talk about pot calls.
We
got another one planned for box calls, mouth calls. Going to get to trumpets. We're just going to kind of touch on all these and have the best people that we can have access to come in and teach us and explain these things to us. And today we've got Terrence Williamson.
In the house.
And this guy knows how to run a pot call. And I'm losing my voice here a second, but I'm just telling you.
Bobby always Bobby palpitates when you say it's late call. So
I can use all the help I can get. Yep,
no doubt about it.
Yep.
Terrence, welcome.
Well, hey, I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to running some calls and talking about some turkeys today.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from?
Well, I'm from West Alabama, over less than an hour drive from here, over in Pickens County. I grew up in a little town of Gordo. a lot of good turkey hunters in that county that, that y'all
a lot of here. Speed traps too. Yeah.
We are known for that. Every time I tell someone that I'm from Gordo,
you got to slow down when you go through Gordo.
Every time you go through Gordo, don't go 36, go 35.
That's right.
Every time I tell someone I'm from there, they tell me about the time they got pulled over passing through there. So
I'm not going to even touch on the stories I've heard. I avoid them.
So you make a living. You work with the highway department, right?
Yes, sir. I work for Alabama DOT. I'm civil engineer. I've been with them for about a little over 18 years, and that may be the wrong profession to be in to try to take off and turkey hunt as much as I do. It's great for duck hunting because a lot more rain in the wintertime, and a lot of those construction projects are rained out during that time of year, so I can take off and travel to duck hunt without it really affecting anything. But this time of year, when as the turkeys are starting to gobble and seasons are starting to come in, that's about the time we're trying to get new construction projects up and off the ground and get them going. So they do kind of get in the way of each other sometimes. But
work just does.
We call the real world.
That's right. Well, he's the opposite of us. We're looking at the long-range forecast going, oh, my gosh, pouring down rain on opening weekend. And he's looking at the forecast going, yeah, pouring down rain on opening weekend.
That's right. I'm going out there in it.
Exact opposite. Yeah. He probably knows more about hunting in the rain. We talked about that, and I said what my old friend had said. They do the same thing they do when it's pretty. You're just not out there. You know, we all stay at home. He probably knows more about bad weather hunting because that's when he gets to go.
Hey, if we're rained out, I'm taking off and let that rain break and go find a field with one in it trying to do its thing. They're going to be wet. Yeah, still being turkeys, whether we're out there or not. Right.
And they do like to get out in fields when it's
wet. That's right.
Yeah, especially when it's wet.
That could be a podcast in itself.
Yeah, do you think it's just the water dripping from the trees that bothers them, or did they dry out faster, or what is it? Because even when it quits raining, if it's still the woods are all wet, they'll want to get out there, you know?
That's right. I don't know if it's partially to dry out, but also to get out there where they can hear. Because like
yeah,
you said,
I bet you that's too. They can't feel protected.
All those here with all those drips dropping.
Drips dropping to you.
That's right.
I didn't think about the hear.
And everything's so much quieter. Yep. Walking around in the leaves too. Yep. So.
Drips dropping.
Drips dropping.
Drips dropping.
Drops dripping.
That's the name of our new band.
We come up with those quite often. That's pretty good.
Isn't drip, is that a new slang word? For
We learned clothing? Drip when old Sam Kohler was here.
Yeah, you drip. You got some drip going
got
on.
Got some
there.
Companions drip.
Well, a little bit. That's right. I tried to dress appropriately for the day.
Styling.
That's awesome.
I see a lot of turkeys riding down the highway. You see them up on.
You're talking about on the side of the road. You're not talking about in vehicles, right?
Yeah, on the side of the road.
I didn't make sure you weren't talking about people.
Yeah, what's that little bottom right there? McShann.
Wait now, y'all got to hold on.
So do you make note of these places? And boy, I need to go check out that highway right there.
I'm not going to lie, because I'm over our Tuscaloosa area projects, and we cover from Tuscaloosa, Greene, Sumter County.
Uh-oh. Hold up now. Wait,
stay out of
just
Sumter
a
County.
Daggum minute.
Stay out of Sumter County.
When I'm out riding projects, if we see a turkey, I'm going to pull over and pull out my phone. I've got OnX on there, and I'll drop a pin, and then I'll go back and try to look and see if I know any of the property owners around there when I get home. And
How can I call these people?
That's right.
Do you have other people with the DOT that are looking for turkeys and giving you information?
I try to tell all my buddies, but you know, most of them are turkey hunters too, but I try to tell them to be on the lookout where they see some.
Yeah, you know those saying about how to know for sure when a turkey hunter's lying.
Yeah.
That's it.
His lips are moving.
Especially this time of year.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, definitely true at this table.
You're never getting the full truth.
No.
You might get a little grain of it.
That's pretty cool. Right. He's got a system, too. That's,
yeah.
That, you know, it's not only what he has to do.
Keep our eyes out down there.
But it makes it fun. It makes the whole process more fun.
Wow. Well, so we see I guess it's crimson clovers, first thing that kind of starts blooming on the side of the roads, and maybe that's what turkeys are out there after. I don't know.
That's right. That's in a lot of our seed mixes on our construction projects. So it's one of the first things that blooms up, and they're out there in it quite a bit on our right of ways.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so look, let's turn our attention to these pot calls.
I would much rather talk about turkey calls than work. That's great. Yes, sir.
So can you tell us a little bit about the history? Who made the first kind of slate style call?
You know, I should have did my homework more. I knew Bobby was going to ask some hard questions today. I listened to all his trivia questions, and I honestly, you know, I don't know the history of where pot calls got started, but I know I've been calling in competition since for over 30 years, I was a young kid when I was fortunate enough to get started. And back then, a lot of your early pots, if they weren't hand-turned wood pots that someone had turned, then Mike Batty, Mike did a lot of those first plastic pots that a lot of the different companies used. And
a true pioneer.
And yeah.
That jet slate is the first one I can remember seeing. Yep.
Like, that really wasn't a pot call per se. It was that it was wood, a wood bed with a little strip of slate in the bottom.
That's right.
Yeah, and then those troughs.
And then it's the like trough. A trough, exactly. And then there was a aluminum one.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know who made the first aluminum one. But
I don't either.
I think Billy White made one of the aluminum.
He did make. I remember Billy White's aluminum because I had one of his chatter or paddle boxes for a long time.
That the Alabama Cackler?
That's it.
That was it.
It was long and narrow.
That's what a paddle box is.
No, no, the little aluminum.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. He did have one
Alabama
of those,
Alabama Cackler.
Who had one? I guess Lynch had a jet
slate. That was the jet.
The jet slate.
Yeah.
Oh, here it is.
Had one of those, lost it.
Billy White.
Corn cob and a piece of burnt.
It was always burnt on the end.
Yep.
Yeah. I've still got one old jet slate put up. That one of the old Ben Lee trough calls. That's right. Was a good one, too.
Yeah, I remember that. I did have a trough of Ben Lee. Yeah. He had aluminum, didn't he?
I think he did slate and aluminum.
Yeah, I think he did.
So slate just sounds so henny to me. But like sitting around here, I expect you're going to sound just fantastic.
Well, let me just say, he would know. What are all the different substances today besides just slate? I mean, I know slate and glass, but there's a lot more.
You know, everything started, I guess, with slate and glass, and then aluminum, crystal.
Ceramic. Yep.
But now guys are starting to find that there's even variations in slate. You can get a green slate, a purple slate, red slate, different tints of glass sound different. There's a bronze colored glass or crystal now.
Right, yeah.
And there's different grades of crystal. And that was one thing when Spence and I were first looking at for Rolling Thunder for the pot call market, trying to figure out which grade of crystal, which type of crystal. There's so many different ones and a lot of trial and error. We ended up picking out the crystal for one of the calls that I helped Rolling Thunder come out with a few years ago.
Good for you.
So let's start with the slate, though. But sitting right here, it sounds fantastic. But I've noticed that a lot of times if you're out there in the morning that it's high humidity or whatnot, it kind of sounds the slate is slicker. There's something it's just not as consistent to me as it.
That's right.
As I would hope that it would be.
That humidity and that moisture in the woods from the surface of your slate to your wood striker, if that's what you're using at that time, you get out there, that humidity affects everything. And that slate, it just holds that moisture on there. And it can sound really good here in this room, but if you...
It's always so depressing. You sound so good, you know, in the office or
in
at home.
Man,
and then,
you're killing it in
then
the truck.
At 6:50 in the morning, you pull that thing out and it just doesn't.
Well, also, I mean, even just holding it in your hand, it'll, you know, the humidity from your hand.
Yeah, the walk in,
so
the sweating.
Can you keep it in a container and help that?
You do?
At all? Is anything we can do to help
you
that?
You can. You can get a little plastic, like Tupperware type container and keep your call in that. And especially if it's raining, honestly. If it's raining, I'm probably not toting a slate that morning anyway.
A
plastic pot with an aluminum surface that's not going to soak up that moisture in some kind of waterproof type striker, or just my mouth call. I mean, I know we're talking about pot calls.
No,
if
that's
it's raining
good.
Most of the time, I'm just leaving the truck.
Talk about strategy too.
Well, I mean, you don't want to ruin a great call.
That's right.
Let me ask you this. This is the thing that always kind of intrigues me about pot calls. How do you find the sweet spot in one? Do you have a system or do you know it's going to be on this side, one side or the other? What? Tell me.
It's usually in the same spot on just about every call. If most pot calls, you're going to have holes in the bottom where your sound's resonating out of. As you're striking that call surface, the vibrations are going through whatever your calling surface is and then over that soundboard. And there are different types of soundboards, but as that soundboard vibrates, your sounds are coming out through the holes that are in the bottom. And if you flip this pot here over, you see where that circle, where the holes are there. If you flip it back over on the other side, right in line with where those holes are, somewhere on that surface is where that sweet spot's going to be.
So on the... Not in the dead middle of it ever.
That's
pretty
right.
Much between there and the outside edge somewhere.
The dead middle is just like you said. It's usually really dead. If,
right.
Like on this one here, that's really dead right in the middle of that pot. But if you get out towards that edge, right on top of where those holes are, you've just that tone there, you get so much more life in it.
Yep, and henny sounding.
And it may be, just depending on how you hold your the pot, it could be on the top right corner, or it could be anywhere around that surface. And usually, I just got lucky and scratched up half of this one, and I found the spot that I was happy with. Normally, I'll scratch up the whole entire surface on a call, and I'll call all the way around it until I find that the best spot on there, and then I'll mark it with a marker so that I can go back to that spot each time.
Yeah, I like that.
Your daughter's been begging you to hunt since her little brother shot the big 8 last year. You've ran a fire, dissed the fields, got stuck, got unstuck. Planted food plots, fertilized, and prayed for rain. You moved trees, limbed roads, even bought one of those fancy cell cameras.
So what's your excuse?
LS Tractor.
Moultrie has pioneered the game management category. Today, Moultrie is one of the best-selling brands of feeders and seeders in the world, and they continue to innovate with new technology that gamekeepers will rely on. Moultrie products are always field-tested and designed for hunters by hunters, combining forward-thinking innovation with time-tested practicality. Moultrie, first in feeders since 1979. All right, so guys, Moultrie is offering our listeners a 15% site-wide discount at MoultrieFeeders.com. Use code MossyOak with a capital M, MossyOak, at MoultrieFeeders.com and get that 15% discount.
Well, let's hear what you sound like. Run through some calls for us.
Okay, this is just a crystal pot. This is actually I've got it written on the back, hunting call. That's
your hunting call
This is right out of the vest.
Don't set it down in this office.
Oh, it's a little weathered. It's been through a few seasons, but it's a crystal, but you can get really, really good and quiet and soft on it.
Yeah.
But you can also get loud.
That striker you use, is that the one that comes with it?
This is a Purple Heart. I think the first year that we brought these calls to the market, I think we had the one-piece Purple Heart or maybe the one-piece Diamondwood with it that first year. But it's a striker that Rolling Thunder does sell.
Separate. Yeah, I noticed they sell. A lot of companies are selling strikers separate because we talked to someone the other day that was experienced like you, and I think you would probably agree in most cases the striker is probably more important than the actual call. You got to have a good call. But I've got so many strikers from over the years, and you would not believe how
– the difference.
Know, if I go through 50 strikers – half of them won't even make even a half decent sound on it. And it's just certain strikers and certain substances will work and won't work.
That's exactly right. I may carry one, no more than two pot calls in my vest, but I may have 6, 8, 10 strikers in there. Each one of them gets a different tone and a different sound. And you just have to go through them all to see which one matches up.
The saddest thing, though, is the most important just about, and it is the easiest thing to lose.
It is.
Yeah. I've lost so many. I've still got all my, like the slate I have is like 30 years old, and different stuff has like been around, but dang, I lose the strikers. And that's what I don't, today I don't have one I like on that old call. I got to find something.
Well, is that one laminated?
It's just a...
Just not, Purple Heart.
No, we've got a laminated, a two-piece diamond wood striker and a one-piece. That laminated diamond wood is what I hunt with most of the time. Mm-hmm. It's very versatile. That diamond wood sounds good on just about any surface and any call that you put it on.
So one thing I would tell people I'd do, just for fun, is like if you buy a new slate call, pot call, whatever, crystal, try all your strikers you have at home. I mean, if you've been hunting very long, you probably got or one of your buddies or something, try different strikers and just see. Because you never know when you go, wow, might not even be one that came with it that you like the best.
Oh, it frustrates my wife so much. I may come home with one new pot, but then I've got a big Plano storage container just with I don't know how many strikers in it.
I bet you do.
I'll set it down on the bed in the bedroom, and I'll be in the back trying to hide in the back of the house running 100 different strikers on the pot call just trying to figure out which one sounds the best on that pot.
You mentioned diamond wood. Can you describe what that is? Isn't it like layers of wood that have been laminated, like Randy said, and glued together?
Yes,
right?
Sir. It comes in a sheet. It's real thin layers. They're probably, 1/16 to 1/32 of an inch. Mm-hmm. They're real thin layers, but those multiple layers are glued together. And then from there, you know, they're cut into blanks and people turn them down for pots or box call lids or the striker.
Is that diamond wood because it's very dense? Is that why they call it diamond wood? Or?
You know, I've always wondered why they called it that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if it was the first people that made it.
I just like using that. You know, it's not a single species of wood one piece. It's several pieces of wood glued together. So you're not just getting the wood. I think the glue itself mm-hmm. has an effect.
That's right.
Yeah, and it makes it more weatherproof too.
So, I mean, I like having just regular, you know, like Purple Heart or hickory or whatever, but like whatever that laminated stuff, the diamond wood is cool to have too.
I found that it's a lot more consistent. It sounds good on just about anything that you put it on. And that's what we started packaging with our crystal.
Mm-hmm. And do you normally prefer like a flared tip over the regular tip?
Those flare tips are more forgiving. If for like in calling competitions, the slightest mistake and you're not going to place that day. So I feel like you need to be more precise, like on the calling competition side. So I'll run a straight tip anytime I'm running calls in a contest. But when you're hunting, that flare tip is so much easier to run, more forgiving. There's more surface area mm-hmm. to run that striker tip on the calling surface. And for hunting, most of the strikers I'm running are a flare tip.
Okay. Good to know.
Well, let's hear something.
Sure. I'll start out kind of soft, and this one will do a little bit of everything. Like I said, it's my hunting call, so it's usually the only one in my vest with a couple of different strikers with it. And you can do your soft clucks that when turkey's first waking up on the limb, your real soft clucks and tree yelps. But you can also get loud with it. We'll just do...
Crank it out.
I'll just make some sounds. We'll just say the hen's waking up, and we'll just go through all the different sounds that, mm-hmm. that you may do in a hunt.
As they say, that's turkey.
Yeah, that's I love turkey right that there. That high frequency that was mixed in on that yell.
I like his little stutter step.
It's almost like folks singing in harmony. You know, mm-hmm. like I can't get all of it.
Would you have gobbled?
Oh, I would have gobbled. Yeah,
well, that I appreciate good. That. Well, thank you.
So, is that your go-to call there? Is that and that's a crystal? You prefer that over a slate or?
It is when. When I first came to Rolling Thunder with Spence, I guess that was summer of 2020, he told me, he said, we've got a little bit of time, but now we need to bring it to the market this coming turkey season. So put some thought into it. If you had one call to take to the woods to hunt with, what would it be? I started thinking, and just for the versatility from getting that high front end and then that rollover there, just that crystal will pull a gobble out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when other things won't, and I'm a big aluminum guy too for that same reason, that higher frequency, but trying to come up with something that was the most versatile, just one good hunting call, I wanted to go with a crystal. And
aluminum's a little higher maintenance.
It is.
And that's how to slick it. I mean, you have to, it slicks up really quick. It leaves the residue on your call.
Well, it's a good point.
I mean, your striker, I mean.
What are you doing to that crystal? How much roughing it up are you doing? And usually, how often?
Before I even get out of the truck in the mornings, I try to have all my mouth calls. I've already been running them on the way, just trying to get everything loosened up and ready to go. And then my pot calls, before I ever get out, I'll take a piece of sandpaper. And I use a pretty fine, let's see what this is. This is 120 grit. Yep. But I'll take some fine sandpaper and I'll go ahead and rough the surface up of my pot before I take it out of the vest and get it roughened up and put a surface back over it or just slide it down the pocket. And then I'll take a Scotch-Brite pad and just rough up the end of my striker there. Mm-hmm. But I try to do all that. I'm
ready to go.
I'm one of those guys that the other guys that hunt with me think I'm crazy. I'm getting there an hour, hour and a half before things even think about waking up. And I don't want anything to know I'm in the woods. When I get out of the truck, I go and sit down in the dark, and I'm letting everything wake up on its own. And I don't want to make any kind of sound or do anything that would let anything know that I'm there, much mm-hmm. less a turkey.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I like that strategy.
Yeah, that's a woodsman right there.
So, resemble that remark.
As far as scuffing it up, I know we're going to have some OCD listeners wanting to know how you scuff it up. Like, so are you going in a straight line? Are you going in a circle?
Well, on the surface of the pot, I'll take that fine sandpaper and go left to right across the surface.
Right.
Because when you're yelping on it, you're calling across the grain, across the way that you scuffed it up to get that two note, that breakover in your yelp. You're calling from that sweet spot where you're getting that higher front end, and then as the striker moves towards the center of the call, that's where it's breaking over.
Okay.
Right. So you're going across it like 90 degrees, but you're turning, so at the end of the yelp, you're actually running parallel. Yep.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can see how
the mark right there. Yep.
Even though it's coming towards the middle, but I'm kind of staying in that sweet spot.
It looks like you're making a C.
It does. It is more of a C.
You know, I watch you run that thing. It's like someone playing the violin in the symphony. I mean, it's an art form.
Well,
but he is. But it's not. You know, most people just grab this thing, and the average guy, me, whatever. Just it's all, you know, they're running with the striker. But I have to give him dibs for us, Bill Zierin.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
True pioneer.
Yeah.
One of the greatest pot call makers in history. Said probably changed the face of it next to people, you know, invented people like Mike Batty. But I watched him. I was like, how does he do that? And just watch him. He doesn't just run a call on the slate. He's actually, both hands are working in unison like a surgeon operating on somebody. It's pretty cool to see, to get what he does. He doesn't just run the striker, but he's moving his hand and rotating both wrists at the same time.
Kind of like the guy we were watching making arrowheads.
Exactly.
You know, using both hands.
That's right.
For, you know, leverage and all that stuff.
Yeah, you could just really, they almost do as much sometimes with the little intonations with the slate hand. You know, your left hand, I guess, if you're right-handed.
You know, when I first got into competition calling in there, well, I guess I first started in the mid-90s. But those Cody calls, Bill's calls, that was what everybody ran. That was the best wood pot call that you could find. And to this day, there's one of the old green topped hickory.
Yep. And that's Cody pretty sought after.
Is it in my vest every time I go hunting?
Yep. I got one.
That was Bob Dixon's favorite call. And he could flat run one too.
So as far as using something to scuff up the surface, we're talking about a crystal call here.
That's right.
If you're using a slate, are you using a different abrasive for that?
If I'm using a slate, I'm using the same fine grit sandpaper or a Scotch-Brite pad, either one of those. And half the time, after you've been chasing a turkey through the woods halfway through the morning, you'll take whatever you can find in whatever pocket you can get to at the time to,
well, that's
to
good
scuff
to know.
It up with.
Okay.
But now, competition side of things, I'm so OCD on that. I'm not even using if I'm scuffing this call up with this piece of sandpaper.
And that's a crystal, by the way.
This is my crystal pot here. That piece of sandpaper goes with that call. I'm not even using that piece of sandpaper on a different call. I don't
want to mix nothing up.
I don't. And
good for you.
So yeah. after you sand your slate, are you blowing that debris off?
Yes, sir. If I'm
lightly though, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Don't spit on it.
Don't spit on it, Bob.
You'll be there to spit on it and then
start over again.
That's it. But now, same way, competition side, completely different than that. I've got this little fine brush. I think I stole it out of some of my wife's makeup stuff. But after I condition one to go to use in a calling contest, I'll take that little brush and, especially like on a slate, get all that excess off into the side, because a buddy of mine, right before he went up on stage to call one time, I remember he went to blow the dust off after he had sanded his call, and he blew a big
loogie
spit wad right in the sweet spot on his call, and he was done. I mean, he tried to call that day, but
you use a makeup brush.
It is.
I'm going to sneak into Walmart, catch Bobby a picture of Bobby at the Maybelline aisle.
Yeah, pick him up.
That's right.
Talk to us about, I think one of the most important things, and I'm seeing you doing out there, is how you hold the call, you know, like the bottom of it, because it's almost like you're creating an echo chamber between the bottom of the call and your hand. And then it looks like, I mean, just watching you, your other hand is kind of on the edge of the call, not to mess the vibration of the top of it up.
That's exactly right. I hold it.
Fingertips.
Right there with my fingertips and pretty much pretty evenly spread out all the way around the call. And you're making, like you said, you're making that area for that sound to come out and resonate. And then with the striker, I'm laying just the edge of my palm mm-hmm. of my hand on there just to really mm-hmm. to steady your hand. And
just like getting a rest with a rifle.
That's right. Mm.
And then trying not to look like you're touching the surface with any part of your hand.
Not at all. I try not to. The palm of my hand may touch just the edge of it, but not enough to affect that vibration, because that's, you know, you're getting that sound from the vibration. So the more you can do to let that sound resonate and to have as least amount of contact with it, the more vibration you're going to get out of it.
Crank down on it one more time. I love the sound of it.
Sweet music.
Some of these turkeys about to fly off the wall in here.
Oh, man.
That is a maestro. I mean, that is a maestro performance.
So you keep mentioning contest calling. You've been really successful in that, haven't you?
Well, honestly, I got started in that. I guess if you look at how long I've been doing it, I guess I got lucky a few times, but I've been doing it for over 30 years now.
Wow.
I was lucky enough.
And you're calling it friction contest.
Yes, sir. Growing up, There really weren't very many friction divisions, and I just called in the youth divisions when I first got started. But as friction calls got more popular and more advanced, and they've came a long way with them in the last 20 years, but honestly in the last 10, even more so. But I got started out, I think I was 8 or 9 years old. My dad helped Eddie Salter when Eddie traveled around selling calls.
King of the 10-inch beard.
But I followed them around to different hunting expos, and they finally talked me into getting in the calling contest, and I'm pretty sure I was dead last in it. I got up there nervous, and I messed up. But I really enjoyed doing it, and I wanted to do it again, and I started going and getting in more. And the very first one I ever remember, and I've told Will this story several times, was when I guess it's when y'all sponsored the world championship, when it was either in Bessemer or Birmingham. Mm-hmm.
Birmingham, yeah.
When I went to register for the junior world championship, you had all of your guys there doing all the registration. Bob Dixon was pretty much the one running everything, but you had Cuz helping with registration. You had Troy Ruiz back then. You had all those guys helping. Mm-hmm. And I was this little kid that I saw all these guys on Hunting the Country and at all these hunting expos, and they're the guys that are working to sign everybody up for the contest. And I thought that was the greatest thing.
We had so much fun doing all that.
That was a great event.
You know, it was fun. We injected some new things. I think the first, like friction, the first – team calling thing,
right,
which I actually to this day enjoy listening to more than any of the contests. That two-man team thing is
pretty cool.
Because two guys, I mean, one guy can sound like maybe two turkeys, you know, that's really talented. Maybe three with another calling. But those guys sound like two guys can sound like a whole flock.
It's amazing. It really is. It's been fun.
It's a spectator sport.
Oh, it is. And they've kind of transitioned the two-man deal at the Grand Nationals in a little bit different direction now. Mm-hmm. But because of the popularity of the friction stuff, now you have one guy that does half the calls that they ask for with a mouth call, and the other guy does the other half on the friction calls. And that's where I've been, I guess, the most successful the last few years. When the very first year the NWTF added that division at the Grand Nationals, Hunter Wallace and I, in 2019, we won the very first two-man air and friction challenge that they had.
That's awesome.
We got lucky and won it again the next year, right?
That's not luck right there.
Well.
That's calling Alabama lucky.
I tell you.
In football.
Well, you know, then we had it in 2020 right before all the COVID stuff shut everything down. And, you know, we went 1 year without having the Grand Nationals. And then we had it again in 22. And Hunter and I had won the first two they ever had, and we were so excited. We were going to do it three in a row. And it got down to Hunter and I, and then there was one other group of college on stage with us. It was Dave Owens and his partner, Zach. And we came in second in the third one, so we almost made it three in a row. But Dave and his partner, and they're great guys, good friends of ours as well. And I was happy to see them win, but I sure would have liked to have. We could have made it three in a row, that would have been great.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about the all-new Gunner Dog Bowl. It's designed for home and built for travel. It's customizable, leak-resistant, light on weight, solid on durability, and rust-proof. Like other Gunner products, they're made in Nashville and designed for everywhere.
Have you heard about the LS Gamekeeper Tractor Giveaway? That's right, we're handing over one of our Gamekeeper used LS tractors, and believe us, the team isn't thrilled about saying goodbye. This powerhouse comes equipped with a front loader, belly mower, backhoe, and tiller, making it the ultimate camp tractor with unmatched versatility. It comes with a certified pre-used warranty straight from LS, and the Gamekeeper's crew has given it their stamp of approval. Don't miss out. Head over to mossyokegamekeepers.com to discover all the ways you can throw your hat in the ring.
I still remember the first, it was kind of revolutionary and all the calling stuff, but the first person who ever dared use friction call in the Open, the Grand National thing, was, I believe it was Matt Morat.
It was. And that's who I looked up to.
Man, he could run
he
one.
He could do it now.
And he could.
He still can. And when he and I, when we got to work together a few years there at Zinc and Avian X, back when we were doing that deal, and I finally got to hunt with Matt out in Texas and watch him call up some turkeys, and we got to hunt together a few days. And after growing up watching him calling in all those competitions, mm-hmm. because it's like you said, he was the first and the most successful with friction calls.
He won
the senior open division of the Grand Nationals running friction.
Yep.
He's the only guy I know of, I guess, to this day to ever do that. So I looked up to him, and when him and Eddie did the HS strut, they did all that stuff in the 90s, that was what all the kids, we all grew up watching that. And
yeah. So do you have looks like you brought a couple more calls. What else have you got over there?
I did. This is a different call that Rolling Thunder came out with last year. It's a peg leg series, and it's a cedar pot with an aluminum surface, a black anodized aluminum.
Oh, wow.
If I don't – normally I keep two calls in my vest. If I'm toting two, a lot of times I'm just toting that one crystal. Just
right.
I don't want to be weighed down a whole lot in the woods.
Right.
Yeah.
But if I'm not running a crystal, I'm usually running that anodized aluminum, just because that higher frequency, it'll pull a gobble out of them sometimes when nothing else will.
Let's hear what it sounds like.
It's a little bit different tone, but it's...
You might want to wear your ear protection.
Same striker.
It's going to be piercing. I can hear it.
We're going to act just like we were hunting. I'm going to use the same striker that I would have had on that, because most likely if it's dark and you're pulling you don't know which striker you're pulling out. So, yeah, we'll just use the same one on it. But even on the clucks on that front end, you can hear that higher pitch on the clucks on that aluminum.
That's
an homage to my buddy Russell, if I'm not mistaken.
That's it.
Right?
That is Russ.
Russ Den.
Great guy. He's been a good guy to work with. I've really enjoyed bouncing ideas off of him. He's a great call maker. He knows all the different woods and the different components, and he had the idea to do the turkey track instead of the holes in the bottom you see on this one. He did a turkey track on this to resonate the sound out of it. But
which is actually probably more sound coming out
than
the holes.
That's right. There's a lot more. A whole lot more area for that to
it
come
definitely
out.
No, sound
could
like,
tell, yeah, you could tell the difference even with these headphones on we got. It's not as grabby as that scratched up crystal is.
It's
a little slicker.
Pleading.
I've never had a metal surface pot call before. Is there anything, aluminum, whatever. Is there anything different you do when you're scuffing that up, or how to condition it?
I do. If you use sandpaper on that, you're going to get grooves and lines in it, and right. your striker is going to grab, and you're going to have bad notes. So if you're using an aluminum, I just use just a Scotch-Brite, strictly a Scotch-Brite pad. Same deal, though.
All Scotch pads aren't the same, though, are they? Aren't there coarser ones and finer ones?
There are different.
I seem like I got to have the coarsest one for it to really scratch things for me.
That's right. I don't know.
You get what they sell at the sporting goods store these days, pretty much.
That's it. I've tried to buy the – there's some green. You can buy some green Scotch-Brite pads like at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And those don't seem to be as coarse as the dark brown ones that you can get at your sporting goods stores. But that brown, the brown Scotch-Brite is what I try to keep in my vest.
And So answer me this. I have – since I lost up, the only thing I've got that's really consistent is actually a aluminum tip striker. Now, and I'm not running aluminum with it. I'm running either the crystal glass or slate.
Yes, sir.
But the only thing about it, it will, you know, there's always a residue issue or a film. It gets slicker easier. But for me, you know, what is the most, crystal for me sometimes is not as forgiving as slate. So I usually go to a slate first. You're walking, you're out of breath, you're sitting there, and when you first sit down, you're getting old and out of shape like me. And then, you know, it's different than, you know, I'm just broadcasting up in the daytime. So that's when I'll use a crystal more. But I want to because it sounds so good, but I always end up not liking what it sounded like or slipping, or it just doesn't sound as good as I thought. Is the slate, it seems to be more consistent for me. At first daylight.
You know? All in all, probably the slate would be the most forgiving.
Yeah. And the forgiving. I definitely need forgiveness on that. So.
Well, it's just you can get so soft and quiet on a slate. And you can always call louder, but you can never – if you – right out the gate, if you call too loud and scare one that's right over the ridge, you can't get that back. So you can always start out softer. So a slate, honestly, if – I know normally I go to the woods with a crystal, but just across the board, just everybody and collectively, if you had one call to go to the woods with it, probably a slate would be the
with a good pouch.
I'd say that's 75% of my calling is on a pot type call. What do you know when you're in the woods on average? I'm sure you use mouth calls a lot too.
I do. Not in competition. I'm good enough to kill turkeys with them, but that's about it. But I probably honestly kill more turkeys. I may start a turkey on a pot call, but then you get that
when they get close,
150 yard mark. It's time to put them down and switch. I've got a little 2-reed ghost cutter, two reed bat wing that finishing them out with that soft stuff. Or walking around, I'm like I said early on. I try not to let anything know I'm there when the woods are waking up. But throughout the day, if I'm on, well, I guess it really private or public, I guess kind of treat it the same. If I'm walking around, I've got a mouth call in, a little 2-reed ghost cut, just doing some soft clucks and yelps, and try to sound like I'm a turkey moving through the woods or down the road.
Yeah, how often are you able to strike one doing that? In other words, just kind of, you know, pretending you're a turkey, you know, yipping as you walk and stuff, which I know you have to be careful in public places like that. How often do you actually stumble onto one by doing that? And if you do, I'm sure if you're calling soft, he's probably right on top of you too.
I guess just thinking about it year in, year out, usually one or two turkeys a season around here in Alabama, I feel like.
How fast do you hit the deck?
And that's the thing. Last year, one of the ones that I killed, the only one I killed that way last year, we had called up one for my buddy early that morning. He had killed one right off the bat, and then we were just trying to move around and find one, and we're walking around on where some hardwoods and some pines met, and we called kind of in the pines up. We thought turkey was in a food plot up on a hardwood ridge and never did hear a thing, and we keep moving our way towards the turkey, and you know, I just called real soft on mouth call, and he gobbled just right over the hill. Oof. We didn't even have time to sit down. It was just stand behind the tree that we were there, and in just a minute, he came following a hen right over the ridge and never even gave us a chance to sit down, but he was coming. And
that's a good point. Sometimes you will do more harm than good trying to get on the ground, plus you can't see sometimes, so just freeze, get a tree and freeze, you know?
That's the thing, hunting all the different pine plantations that we hunt now. a lot of times when you sit down, you lose
a lot of
three
sight.
Quarters yeah. of, oh, of what yeah. you can no, see absolutely. versus standing up. And yep. it's all situational. There's times and places that will work and won't. But if I've got a chance to stand up and hide behind a big pine and the turkey can't see me, I may.
Yeah.
I've tried it, and I'm sure I'll try it again at some point. Yeah. Good Lord willing.
Lord have mercy. I tell you what, the standing up.
Oh gosh.
If you're facing the right direction, but if something happens off to your side, you get in a bind.
You better be prepared to close the deal really, yeah. really quick if you're standing up.
Just so many things that can go wrong. I'd rather be sat down with my back to a tree comfortable and
yes.
calling it to me. But sometimes you just have to scramble and make the best of it.
What are we not asking you about these calls? I see you didn't bring a slate call. That really surprises me.
Well, I didn't know. Well, honestly, I grabbed the two calls that were in my vest, and I tried to treat it that way. If
yeah,
I was,
there you go.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I've been getting my stuff together for, you know, season will be here before long, so I've been getting all my calls in the right pockets, and
So to kind of reiterate, it's about finding the right striker with that surface, and you may have to go through a bunch of them till you find the right one.
It is. I may run 100 different strikers on this pot here before I pick out the one that I want to put in my vest.
I don't ever remember buying a pot and a striker and liking the combo together. It's always another striker to go with that. It's almost like they just. Well, here's a striker.
But I mean, it could change with the time of day.
Well, that's the wood. You know every Dudley can tell you, the wood's different, you know.
That's
different density. Even in the same tree, the wood's different.
Yeah, so. I mean, a humid day versus a dry day.
Ask a
musician. They'll tell you the same thing.
Bob Dixon taught me, and you can't do it before daylight, so you're just dealing with what you're dealing with humidity and stuff. But on the slate especially, it does not perform when it's super cold like it does
that's
when
right.
it's hot. So. We'd go somewhere from one place to the next up in the morning, and he'd pull them out and throw them up on the windshield and let them get hot. And man, they would scream so much better when they're heated up like that.
They do. Same way on an aluminum call. When that aluminum is really cold, it grabs and it just doesn't have that same sound. Mm-hmm. Competition calling. When I used to run aluminum calls to Kiki before they started, they've came a long way with the long boxes. So now when I'm doing a Kiki, I've started trying to transition and do it on a long box, but when I was doing it on one of those aluminum discs, if that room was really cold that we were calling in, like the one up at the Grand Nationals is usually really cold out back behind that stage, I'd have a hand warmer that I would put in my call bag right up against that aluminum call just to keep it warm mm-hmm. for when we walked up on yeah. stage to call. Because when they get cold, they grab.
I didn't think about that because the aluminum's is kind of – I mean, the slate's really more dead when it's really, really cold. I didn't think about throwing a hand warmer in there with it on a cold morning.
Throw it in your vest pocket.
I learned something. I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't figure out a way to do it. I think part of it is also drying it out up there on the windshield.
That's right.
Up in the day, too. But
it'll help.
Manny, you look like you had a question.
Well, I just wanted to hear your story about your first turkey.
Oh, wow.
First turkey.
Or your favorite turkey, however you want to do
either
it.
Either one. Well, how old were you, first turkey?
First time I shot one, I was 9.
Right.
I think my dad just wasn't ready to hand the gun over at that point. I've messed with him about that now.
I resemble that. Mr. Fox was like that.
Because I think I was 4 the first time I watched my dad shoot one.
Oh, wow.
And he made me – I was sitting between his legs. I guess that's a good one to tell to start with. I'm from South Alabama down in Covington County. My dad, early 90s, my dad got a job with Natural Resources Conservation Service as a district conservationist. And we moved to Pickens County when I think I was 7. We moved to Pickens County for him to come up there and help the farmers with all the different land management mm-hmm. programs with NRCS at that time. But early 90s, when I first started going with him, we were hunting in Crenshaw and Covington County. And I remember he had an old Honda big red three-wheeler that
mm-hmm.
we'd unloaded up at the hunting camp. And he'd drive it part of the way. And when I wasn't there with him, I know he would just park and walk. But I guess when I was a little kid, he didn't want me to have to walk near as much. We rode that old three-wheeler in one morning. And I look back at the maps later on because I was curious where we were as I got older and trying to look at it. But I think we were right on the banks of the Conecuh River. And we had a turkey gobbling off in a hardwood bottom. And I remember that turkey gobbling, and I was sitting, my dad had me sitting in his lap, and he shoots left-handed, and I was kind of sitting in his lap and to the side, just kind of right up against him, and I remember how awkward it was for him to try to get the gun up and me sitting right there with him. But we had a group of three long beards come right up there in our lap, or I was in his lap, but they were right up there in our face. Couldn't have been more than 15 yards back then. Dad let them get as close as they were going to get, which was honestly pretty brave considering that I'm sitting there and can move right. And scare them at any time. But Dad wanted me to get the full experience and just see them come all the way up there. And Dad let them get as close as they could get. And they gobbled the whole time coming in. And when he shot that turkey, I remember he told me to go get it. And I jumped up and I ran and I jumped on that turkey as quick as I could. And those wings flapped and he spurred me. And I got beat up for a good 2 minutes by that turkey. But I jumped on top of it. And I remember sitting on top with that turkey with my arm around it the whole ride back on that three-wheeler. All the way back. And, man, I was four, so I had to watch him. Like I said, I think he did it on purpose. Now that I'm really looking, I watched him shoot a lot more before he ever let me tote a gun. But that was a good time, and I've been hooked ever since.
Yeah, it sounds like he did it right.
Yeah.
That's right. I agree.
No doubt about it. Well, cool. We always like.
I'm picturing that in my mind, and it's great.
Yeah. I am too. And so I sent you a note to be prepared to tell your favorite turkey story. But
that's got
to
be it.
You know, it'd be hard to top that one. I guess probably my favorite one now that I've gotten older is with Dad again, and it's with him shooting, and not even me. I was blessed. He took me all over the country going to calling contests. When I decided I wanted to do that, from the time I was 10 until I got out of high school, anywhere there was a calling contest, if I wanted to go to it, he was gonna take me.
Yeah.
So now that I've started traveling and doing more turkey hunting, I've started, you know, trying to take him with me on some trips. We took him out to Texas 1 year, and last year we took him to South Dakota at the end of season, and he got his first Merriam up there.
Nice.
But that was great. But the first his first turkey last season is probably my favorite turkey hunting story. He'll be 70 this year, so he's getting on up there. He's starting to slow down some, and he had to buy some tetras a few years ago because he just can't hear them gobble as good as he could anymore. And I still try to find time between work and everything else. He and I try to still go to the woods as much as we can each spring. And last deer season, he got him an e-bike.
Oh wow. Yeah.
And he loved deer hunting off of that e-bike, and he's turkey hunted on it too. Well, he got it to turkey hunt, but he used it to go to his tree stands, and he took him a spill on his e-bike, and he messed his shoulder up. And Dr. Kane, big turkey hunter, called Dr. Kane. He did all my surgeries from everything I ever messed up playing football. And Dr. Kane did the surgery to fix my dad's shoulder middle of January last year. He was like, I don't know if he'll be ready, because it was pretty extensive, all the stuff that he tore in that shoulder. So we didn't know if he'd be ready to shoot when turkey season came in. But I had the little 410 single shots that I had fixed up for my kids, and I had the little 20-gauge single shots. So when turkey season was approaching, we had him shooting that 410, getting ready. And then as season came in, he was doing his own thing for the first week or so, and he was getting them close, but he could only move so much. He was still getting over that surgery and doing his physical therapy and stuff. So finally we had a couple of turkeys that were acting right, and we had them roosted in a good spot. And I went with Dad that morning, and we got set up about an hour before dark. Turkey started gobbling on the limb just like they were supposed to. We called at them, did all the soft stuff, all the tree talk, and they flew down, and they got quiet, and they did their thing with the hens for a good 30, 45 minutes. And when they started back gobbling, I just called to them a few more times, and they both came in together, and watching that turkey come out of a little hardwood bottom up into the food plot, came all the way across the food plot. Turkey gets out there 35 yards, and just to watch Dad shoot that turkey,
yeah,
not knowing if he was even going to get well in time to shoot one last turkey season there in Alabama. We knew by the time we got ready to go up to South Dakota later on, you know, our season would be about over, and, you know, he would be well enough by then, but we were worried he wasn't going to get well in time to shoot one there at the house. And he's killed one there, as I guess, every year as long as I can remember. So I just to get to call one up for him and watch him do that, and kind of repay him for all the years of taking me and all that. That's probably my favorite turkey hunt right now.
That's awesome.
That is full good. Circle. Yeah, I love
absolutely
it.
Absolutely full circle.
The Furminator is the industry's most versatile piece of food plot equipment, allowing plotters to do every step of the process, working the soil, adding seed and soil supplements, and compacting. From start to finish, with a single implement, it's hassle-free by design. Set it for the seed size and simply drive the tractor, and the Furminator does the rest. Check it out at thefurminator.com.
Nosler is known for their bullets, and now they're making suppressors. Nosler suppressors are made for hunting. Adding a Nosler suppressor to your rifle will make you a quieter, more accurate, and more effective hunter. Protect your hearing and disturb less game with a Nosler suppressor. The time to hunt quiet is now. Learn more at Nosler.com.
Dudley, you got anything else you want to ask?
I want to hear some sweet purrs on one of your calls.
Yes,
we hadn't really We hadn't done any purring yet, sure. I don't think. Or have we?
Well, I'm going to go back to my crystal call for that. Like I said, it's my go-to. You can get really soft with it on the I'll do a mix of some purrs and some of the yelping and clucks and stuff that they do when they're milling around in the woods doing their soft stuff. This is what it sounds like. And that's with a crystal call. Now, if we were doing that with a slate, you could tone that down more and get those more mellow, more rollover in those purrs and a little bit softer. But, you know, just taking one call to the woods, if you're not wanting to weight your vest down with a whole bunch of different calls, that crystal's going to be a little bit higher pitched like that, but it's still a realistic, get those realistic clucks and purrs out of it.
You know, if you got a buddy like Lanny Lanny's got rhythm.
Here we go.
I'm going to compliment.
Hell no.
Lanny's got a little rhythm, and you can be calling like that, and he can be scratching the leaves. And that sounds good.
Yeah,
that does sound good.
Those go well together, and that's what normally – Well, when Dad and I hunt together, now I'm the one on the call and he's the one scratching in the leaves, and it used to be the other way around. So but that right there works. It's killed a lot of turkeys just sitting around doing that clucking and purring and scratching in the leaves.
Well, this has been good. I think we've all learned something.
Yeah, no, we appreciate you being here.
Hey, I've really enjoyed it.
Good.
Yeah, the directional scuffing on your call is something I really hadn't thought about.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just roughing it up and blowing it off real quick. And
well, you know, if you think about just how that striker moves across that surface, if you, depending on which way you scratch it up, determines how, whether you're calling with the grain or across the grain as you're coming back over it. So it all plays a factor. Now, if you're in the woods in the dark, you got to do what you got to do sometimes just to get ready. But
that's right.
But when you can pay attention to that, it does make a difference in the sound that you're getting out of it.
What'd you learn, Dud?
Well, I learned some stuff about aluminum calls. Hadn't done that, but you know, scuffing it. You see people making this little bitty scuff mark, and I guess they're wanting to be able to see the beauty underneath the glass or whatever. But I'm gonna treat it like a hunting call. I'm gonna scuff up a big area, you know,
yes, sir,
and then find the sweet spot.
I'd rough up that whole entire surface and find that best spot on it. But yeah, if you don't have an aluminum call and you in your vest, I'd hit Russ or Spence up. I'd make sure we got you one in there this spring.
I will.
There you go.
It's a good one to have in there for it's middle of the day trying to locate that higher frequency. There's that aluminum's hard to beat sometimes.
I'm gonna do it.
All right, guys. Well, it's been fun.
Yeah.
We
games begin.
Terrence Williamson. We keep in touch with us this spring. Let us know how you doing.
Yes, sir. I'd love to. Just right down the road. I'd love to get together and hunt with some of you guys sometime. It'd be fun.
Yeah, well, we'd love to come over there and hunt with you.
Come on.
You know what? That's the one limiting factor is everybody would love to go hunting with everybody else, and it's so much fun and all, but nobody's willing to be the one sacrificing a turkey over.
No, I grew up around a lot of turkey killers there in Pickens County. I've seen some things over the years.
Oh, my gosh.
But you start managing land and leasing your own properties, and you've got a lot more respect for it, and trying to care of the turkey so that I can make sure both of my kids have turkeys to hunt.
There you go, right there.
We try to take care of them. Like you said, that's one of the hardest things to give away is one of your turkeys.
Especially in the last 10 years, they've gotten more scarce.
Yes, sir.
It's not, you know, I can remember, I looked at that film we're talking about, and I could see days when we were hunting around here, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years after they even opened the season up, we released them, and they were just everywhere, and they gobbled their brains out, and they came to calls. We were just killing turkeys like crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, we had like 11 people and killed like 9 turkeys in 2 mornings. I mean, you just don't do that anymore. Not around here.
That's right.
You
know?
Wow. Well, Terrence, we appreciate you coming over here.
Yeah.
You've been one of my favorite people for a long time. You were the guy that would show up and had the most comfortable hats. You have sold hats for a number of years.
Well, you know, when I was traveling around, I worked at a little sporting goods store first couple of years when I was going to college at Woods and Water there in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, yeah. Tony Laws.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mr. Laws hired me right out of high school.
So, you know, the trivia, if you ever did ask, the very first sporting goods store to buy any Mossy Oak was Woods and Water, Columbus.
Wow.
The very first time I went out, Bill was with me, made my pitch, talking, I'll never forget it. It was David Laws, Tony's brother, but it was Woods and Water. Columbus, Mississippi was the very first place to buy any Mossy Oak.
How about that? Yeah.
But, yeah, I worked there in college, and I got to know all the different sales reps, and I worked with some different call companies through the years, and I wanted to have my own thing to sell when I was going into these stores. And I got to looking around, and I'm proud to be from Alabama. I'm proud to be from the South and traveling around hunting and stuff.
Good for you.
I wanted to come up with a logo that had – it was a hunting or a fishing logo with a duck or a turkey on it, and – the first idea we had was a duck logo with the Alabama state flag and the outline of the state. And nothing like that had been trademarked at the time. So we came up with a Dixie Cup is what we called the first logo. And
I remember that.
When I was first trying to get it off the ground, I was trying to get something made up and trying to get them for all my buddies to wear and just trying to get the logo out there for people to see. And we started with that duck logo, and then we've added a turkey and a deer and a fish and just trying to do a little bit of all of it. And it finally grew to the point we did a website. It's dixie-life.com. And I've got Mississippi logos, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee, just all your southern states. I need to grow it more, but between chasing the kids around and trying to hunt and my real job and this stuff too, there's just only so many hours in the day. But we have a good time with it. As far as following us on the turkey calling side of things, it would be the Rolling Thunder Game Calls website would be the best way to find the calls.
Excellent.
That I've talked about.
Love that
today.
Group of people.
Yes, sir. They've been great to me, and it's been great to be a part of that deal and the team that Spence has put together. It's a great group of guys that are all doing it for the right reasons, and it's been fun to be a part of it.
Good deal. Well, Terrence, we appreciate you coming and your demonstration with your pot calls. You sound fantastic.
Unbelievable.
Well, thank you.
Really Henny.
Yeah, he does.
I listen to my driving time between construction projects. I've got several different podcasts that I pick out that I listen to while I'm riding, and this is one of them. So to get to come over here and to be a part of it, I listen to all of them every week. And every time y'all put one out, I listen to yours and Cuz's and then the Rolling Thunder one. That's my three go-tos.
So. Oh, we appreciate that. I told you somebody was listening.
Yeah, somebody knows. Yeah, thanks. So we've got a lie detector out in the hall. We're going to hook you up to it and
hook
get
me
off.
Up to it. No, I spend a lot of windshield time, so I'd rather listen to some hunting podcasts than some music most of the time. So that's my go-to.
All right, guys. Well, in a little while, we'll be recording another one of these things. So
Short little while.
So thank you, Terrence. We appreciate you being here. Richie, is there anything else we need to do? No,
I guess we're good to go.
All right.
Hey, it's been an honor to be here. Thank y'all for having me today.
Yeah, thanks for coming over.
You were one of our master classes.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Yep. You put one on for us.
Well, thank y'all. I've enjoyed it.
All right. Well, say goodbye, Dudley.
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Richie.
There you go.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife magazine and don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.